Well, I come from a place that is strongly saturated by human pressure. Okay. You have to believe that Mallorca is growing at the rate of the full population of Samos each year. So Mallorca is in the coming years, Mallorca will grow 300,000 people. That's 10 times the population of Samos. So mainly our challenges and the problems we detect are related with this overcrowding pressure of tourism, but not only tourism, the people that want to come to Mallorca because Mallorca has very good infrastructures, Mallorca has very good transport, and all these things that are fantastic for the whatever project you think, oh, Mallorca, good connection, so you can do whatever business you want. So 30,000 people come, in fact, it comes 80,000 people comes to live each year, and 50,000 go away because they don't find their real dream. So Mallorca is what I call a dream shredder. You know, a shredder that destroys the dreams of 50,000 people. That comes 80,000, 50,000 goes because their dream is not come true, because the pressures and the concurrence and so on is really hard. But the rules of neoliberalism makes that everything is going in the direction of growing. You know? I say usually that tourism is a monster that you have to keep in a cage and feed cautiously. So you have to be in control, because one of the first things of tourism is trying to take over the democratic processes of decision. They come, okay, you all are living off tourism, so you have to do what we want. We need hotels, we need this, we need a new road that crosses the island fast, because we can put with a, and they make a huge road that destroys the landscape, that destroys, because this way they can take the passengers from Evdilos to here in 10 minutes less than. So this kind, what I see is this kind of use of the land, the abandonment. You see, if you have a minimally trained eye, you see the agriculture abandoned. Well, I think one of the main things is having a plan, knowing what the model of society we really want, instead of accepting. I think there is this with the neoliberal story is like you spread and you wait something to happen, and so it can happen a real rape of the island, or it can happen that you are driving the situation. If you have a discussion at the social, and I think for example Icaria with only 8,000 people population or 10,000 people population, this has to be possible to discuss what kind of Icaria they want for the future. If they know that they want, do we want to keep the honey, the olives, do we want to keep being a mountain society more than a sea society, that is what's happening now. Do we want to keep these values, and do we want to open the door, but can we control the door of the entrance of the touristic rate, because the tourism is huge, so the pipe has no limit, it can make explode the island. So it's about how we want to control this. Can we put an ecotax so the people that comes is helping to make projects that are good for everyone, not only for the guys who have the touristic thing. It's, I think it's pretty easy to a plan, to knowing the model of society that you want, instead of finally having the model of society that the economy wants, the market wants. It's about market or democracy. A kind of knowledge that I am kind of diving in,
yes,
and having a permeate and enters in my way of seeing and understanding how the same processes that have destroyed Mallorca are acting all over, and how they are more active in some places and less active than others. Of course, for example, airports are very important tools of transformation. So in Greek islands, islands without an airport look look to me more healthy in the environmental point of view, and looks to me that they have a possibility of being really sustainable in the coming future. For example, Icaria, with this surface and one-third the population of Samos, it has less human pressure and can develop mechanisms to accept an amount of tourism, but regulate and have a good agricultural, fishing or other activities that are giving the people well-being. Many of the islands are not pristine. There are not all the islands that we have here in the Aegean have been hugely transformed by human hands.
Yes.
But the transformation was a transformation that was a care. It was people caring with the hands and with the rudimentary tools, but they were relating and living in balance, in a good balance with what the earth can provide. Right now, because the provisions can come from all over, by plane and so on, we are in a foolish relation with the land. And what disconnects us from the land makes us more vulnerable. Many times, for example, if I work in marine reserves, the key topic is to keep the marine environment protected from the excess of people fishing, going and wanting to do whatever. We can sink a boat here to dive, but not a simple boat, an army boat, 300 meters, 5,000 tons, we sink in the sea, so we have a preserved place to dive and to recover the sea. But that's crazy. 5,000 tons of steel have to go to recycling and to be reused for the economy, not to put in the sea for the divers to go, because we have plenty of places in the rocks that can have the fishes.
Can
be observed and they can surf for that. Mm-hmm. So it's mainly protecting the environment from the trending topic ways of doing of the economy. There is about 30 years being involved in the environmental movement and the consultancy and in relation with the science and with the university, the academy. So, for example, in these years I have seen how the academy has lost its independence, because in many times in Spain, for example, the university has been forced to go out to the market to get their money. So that this compromises, they have a conflict of interest. So I have been many cases of bad science driven by the authorities. The authorities say, okay, I pay you a study for that, but the result of the study has to be good for us. So they try to find the good part of what a project of taking sand to a new beach. These projects are a real disaster. This regeneration of beaches are environmental disaster, each one of them. And there has universities that are saying, okay, if you do this and this, you can make it. These kind of solutions they propose are usually not very good. So we are in jeopardy, because many of the gears of the machine are polluted or endangered by this economic interest of the markets. Well, global warming is bad, but for me it's even better to be able to be... that's another interesting question. If we don't rethink what we are doing with energy, it's stupid to be thinking about the pollution that the energy makes. So, for example, if we go away from fossil fuels and we start doing everything that's not polluting, is not making CO2, we will still destroying the planet with clean energy. You can destroy the Amazon with electric Tesla bulldozers. So you will not pollute. There's no pollution. But we destroy the Amazon. We are killing the life skin of the planet. So to me, the emissions of CO2 are a side effect. What's really bad is what we are destroying, the life in the planet. We are building a huge harbor with clean energy that is destroying a place of nesting of fishes. Oh no, this is an emission-free harbor. This is the first emission-free harbor that is built in the world, because it's built with bulldozers that runs on batteries and everything. And the rocks are taken one by one with clean energy systems. That's crazy, because you are destroying the life, or you are destroying the live skin. We are removing trees with electric chainsaws. This is not polluting. To me, climate change, of course, is a problem. It's out of control. There is no... I'm not denying it. I know that this is happening. But even when we reach a solution for that, the drama can be to have a clean energy that's cheap, free for all, democratic, that we can use with no limits, because using energy with no limits is what is destroying the nature, not only the pollution of the production of this energy. That's a very interesting point, that there will be the next discussion, and they will say, okay, here they are, the environmentalists, we have solved the problem of climate change, and now they come that we cannot use energy as we want. And it's true, we cannot use energy as we want. It depends on what affects the planet, what you do. For example, you can have a system to fly with electric airplanes. Okay, it's much less bad than the others, because the others are putting tons of water in the exhaust systems of the planes. This is huge amount of water in the top levels of the atmosphere. So it's not only CO2, it's only also changing the reflectivity of the atmosphere and so on. We can do things better, but if we perform 30% better and we double our activity. For example, a Posidonia seabed, yes, is very resilient. You can go with an anchor, you can destroy a little bit, yes, and you go, it looks like nothing happened. Yes. But at some moment, and because there are many mechanisms that protect it and that keep it working, at some moment, it happened in Mallorca, it was a fishing factory, and the authorities said, okay, you can set up the fishing factory, but you have to look at the Posidonia bed. If it has some damage, you have to stop, and you have to keep the fishing farm away. Okay? They put the fish farm, and they were looking year and years. For 6 years, it looked like the Posidonia bed was okay. But in the 7th year, they said, okay, there is some damage. Well, let's look next year. There is more damage, so stop. Take the fishing farm away. But 5 years after, the damage was still growing. It's like you have a Trans-Siberian train. It's rolling. But if at some moment it begins to stop, there is nothing that can stop it to stop. So because it's like the Gulf Stream. If the Gulf Stream becomes to go slower, and that's a fact, that it's going slower, that means that how we can revive it, or how can we stop, and we can't. So resilience is, for example, the Gulf Stream is not enough resilient, because it's coming down, and it's a lack of giving us a time, a respect time. Guys, you must do something. And we do nothing. If the Gulf Stream stops, well, the planet will change completely, because the warmth will not arrive to England, etc., etc. So there are many things that we don't know that are affecting things. So looking at the resilience and trying to make resilient societies is an interesting point. And trying to understand why they still keep this in place. So
why?
Why some people has still an olive grove in a remote place, and that I say that's an impossible oil. This guy is crazy. Yes. Why is he doing that? And trying to understand the reasons, a person can keep an olive growth well and so on. Because, well, in fact, I'm doing that in Mallorca also, in a small property, and I'm wondering why I'm doing that. So trying to understand what's driving us to do these things, and it's about to keep the feet on the ground and trying to keep it safe, keep yourself safe. It's also about security. If we like the way of life we are having, we should secure it. And securing it means that you have to see what's really worthwhile to keep, and other things that you can keep apart to make a system that's really stable in itself. And it's about resilience. You know, resilience.
Yeah.
Resilience is a kind of resistance. Well, yeah, discussing, planning, participation. Participation. So involving the people in what has to be, because you cannot. And now it's starting to talk about ecofascism. So ecofascism. Have you heard about the story? Because there are some powers. Economic powers, and there are some think tanks that are promoting the idea that if we give too much presence in the discussion, general discussion, to the environmental problems, this can be a good excuse to reduce the democratic processes that in the name of the environment. So, okay. We stop giving, I don't know, energy. We have to pay more for a new system of energy that is more renewable. So you have to stop. So it will be like more rules on the things that affect the environment. And some people is fearing that these rules will be implemented without the democratic process. And they are talking about this eco-fascism. So I think the planet will be a bit fascist with us. The planet will impose us things. But the more global I go, the more local I see that we have to act. So it's very important to have from the local point of view, I believe very much on the grassroots movement. We have to go and convey our messages very clear and try that our messages are not stolen by the middlemen, that are the political middlemen, are using to transfigurate what you are telling. So, for example, I call these guys eco sharks, because they are there waiting for something to happen and they eat it. So we have been for years trying to protect protect the sea. At some moment it arrives to European community, and there is a fund with millions of euros for projects of protection of the sea. So there is someone of these big companies, the beton companies, that decide that one way of protecting the sea is throwing big boxes of concrete to protect the sea. We as grassroots movements generate a state of opinion. This opinion finally crystallizes in a protection idea, and this idea is reinterpreted. Okay, we have 3,000 million euros to spend all over Europe. What these stupid guys, these small guys that are all over the Europe, will be able to do with this money? It's better that we, as the big guys, provide the way of burn these millions in form of concrete. So the lobbies are reinterpreting, rewriting what was originally thought. Finally, it happened. So we have to be very active, keeping.